Hi, folks, and welcome to the Empowering Dietitians podcast, where each week I explore a different topic to help you feel more confident and connected to your work as a dietitian. I'm your host, Jess Romola, a registered dietitian, dietitian supervisor, and owner of Empowering Dietitians, where I help burnt out and unhappy dietitians opt out of hustle culture and reclaim their passion and purpose as a human first and dietitian second. After all, we are all more than dietitians. It's time for another throwback to season 3 of the podcast. As a reminder, this episode is part of a mini-series, a kind of bonus season, so to speak, while I'm away on maternity leave. Today, I'm re-airing one of the top episodes of season 3, episode 82, Confident Communication Skills with fellow dietitian Barb Mayfield. Barb is one of the editors of the nutrition communication textbook used here in the U.S., titled Communicating Nutrition, an Authoritative Guide. The episode is a really wonderful primer on communicating more confidently and effectively as a dietitian, and I understand why it's one of the most popular episodes of the show. That being said, listening back on it, I have some asterisks, some disclaimers, before we dig in. While this episode offers so many great foundational insights on communication, there are some blind spots to it that I have to name. When we know better, we do better, right? The more I learn about inclusive language and communication, the more I can identify how limited some of what we teach on communication is. This is true for most fields and topics, honestly. It can be very whitewashed, very westernized, and there are some examples of that that come through in this episode. One example is when we are talking about expertise and how communication is similar to nutrition in that, you know, everyone eats, so everyone has an opinion on how to eat. A comment is made tying that to communication, saying, we all speak except for a small percentage of people who are mute, so we all feel like experts on communication. And this misses the mark because while we do not all speak, we all communicate. And that one shift makes it a much more powerful, more inclusive, and more effective analogy. I didn't flag that nuance and discrepancy when it came up in the episode, but I want to take full ownership of that now. Another example is when we're talking about not only learning effective communication skills, but teaching our audience to be better listeners as well, we miss the mark on addressing how neurodivergence plays into this. The conversation veers toward paying full attention, being present in the moment. And I want to acknowledge here that for many people, certain behaviors that we as a society flag as quote unquote not paying attention, doodling is actually a really good example of this, are actually tools that people with neurodivergence use to focus better. This isn't the same as multitasking. It's more about the way some people's brains need to be engaged full on and comprehensively in order to absorb anything. And as a society, we need to be doing a better job of recognizing how paying attention can look different for different people. All of this to say, this is still a solid episode, and also, in hindsight, I find it to be incomplete on its own. Perhaps moving forward in future episodes, I'll seek out a guest who can speak more to inclusive communication, taking our communication to the next level. For now, I encourage you to listen to this episode and take from it the gems that it has in it, while acknowledging the privilege of the two individuals, myself included, who are having the conversation. We should always be thinking critically about what we're being taught, including from people who hold positions of authority or are considered experts. Because as we mentioned in the episode, being an expert is not the same as always getting it perfectly right. And this episode is certainly no different. Welcome to the podcast, Barb.
It is so fun to be here with you today.
I am very excited to chat with you because I've seen you, our paths have crossed a little bit on Instagram, and it's so nice to be able to see the face and really talk about communication, which is what you're all about.
It is. And It is really fun to talk via Zoom with people that maybe you've just seen posts or you've read something. And so, yes, we're all missing being in person, but
I know.
This is a good second place.
Yes, I would agree with that. And so for anyone listening, why don't you give them a quick background on who you are and what you do?
So I am Barb Mayfield, and call me Barb. When you call me Barbara, it means you don't know me very well, although I will. Absolutely. I will answer to that.
Yeah.
I am retired from teaching. I taught for quite a few years at Purdue University and did some other things prior to that. But the main course that I taught at Purdue was nutrition communication. And that's really what I love to talk about. And what I feel like I want to leave in my retirement years is a legacy for other registered dietitian nutritionists to build their communication skills. So I'm all about sharing that information, coaching people, creating webinars. I do 2 Zoom calls a month with other educators, and we brainstorm ideas for what to do in the classroom. So that's really what I love to do. I have a website called nutritioncommunicator.com. And you can read more about me there. And I'm sure we'll talk about more about that today.
Absolutely.
As we discuss.
And I love what you're doing, because when I was in school, I didn't get education on nutrition communication. And it's such a foundational skill to have no matter where you land in the nutrition field. And so we know that communication is an essential skill, right? And with my experience, I'm sure that a lot of people listening can relate. We don't really get a lot of exposure to it. So how do we start to bridge that gap? How do we start to learn more about communication and build that skill?
Well, one of the things that I hadn't been totally aware of was how limited the training in nutrition communication is in our field. Mm-hmm. We tend to have these blind spots of just knowing our own experience. So I graduated from the same college that I was teaching at, and that's Purdue. And we have had a nutrition communication course for decades. Mm-hmm. I was there 45 years ago and took that course. So you think to yourself, everybody has it. Well, our department head used to always tell me, Barb, you are really unique. There are not a lot of courses like this. You need to realize how lucky you are. Well, when the Academy approached me about writing the book that became Communicating Nutrition, the Authoritative Guide, this was in response to educators and practitioners saying, we need resources in nutrition communication. Well, when we did some needs assessment and collected data from people who were interested in participating in writing the book, the figures that we got were about something under 20% had taken any kind of formal training in nutrition communication. Well, we've since learned that number is really high, that the number of universities and programs that teach nutrition communication is only a handful.
Oh yeah, I believe that 100%.
And so this book is an effort to provide the resources that colleges and universities and internships, CPD programs, DPD programs can use, and practicing dietitians can use to learn and build their skills. And then the message that I tell people is you learn by doing. Think about how much you've learned about social media just by doing social media, or podcasting.
Absolutely.
By podcasting. So you can't just read about it. You have to put it into practice. And we always just keep getting better.
Absolutely. Well, I say that all the time about being a dietitian in general. I didn't learn how to be a dietitian in school. I learned some skills. I learned some knowledge, but it was when I was out in the field and put into situations that I really grew as a practitioner. So I 100% believe that communication skills would be the same way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They are. In fact, one of the things that I talk with educators about, so think about trying to teach something that you never learned formally.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a little nervous, a little intimidated, and think,
course,
I can't do this. And what my message is, we're always continually learning, and you're going to get better by teaching it. Think about what you learn by teaching something.
Oh, absolutely. So absolutely.
Just do it. Jump in and tell your students, hey, I've learned right along with you. And you will. You'll just keep getting better.
And that's so important for dietitians in particular to hear. We tend to be perfectionists by nature. And I work with a lot of dietitians who are very afraid of teaching something or promoting something that they aren't the experts in, or that they haven't felt like they've mastered. And we really miss out on that beautiful opportunity of like co-learning and growing and learning as we go.
Well, even the expert, an expert is the person who knows how little they know.
There you go.
They know what they know and they know what they don't know. And so the more you learn, yes, you build expertise, but don't hesitate to jump in and get started with, I mean, let's not talk, I'm not going to talk about something I don't know about. I will not fix your car and I will not talk, even walk you through how to even do
sure, sure.
You know, go to the person that knows, but you have the fundamental knowledge.
Of course.
And so adding that communication skill really gives you that confidence to figure out, how do I create messages that resonate with an audience, get to know them, all of those things that really make you effective.
Sure. So what it comes down to, it sounds like you're lucky, fortunate enough to have the exposure to nutrition communication in your undergraduate degree. And that led you then to teach it, which led you to feel more confident and more competent in that area. And you were then eventually approached by the Academy to be one of the voices of nutrition communication for our field. Is that fair Cliff Notes version of it?
Yeah, I had some things that I taught and did or did in practice before I came back to teach. I was over 40 when I came back to teach. I was fortunate then also when I did graduate work, I minored in communication. So my major was nutrition, my minor was communication. So I've always had a real desire to understand how to communicate better.
Absolutely. One of my college roommates was the same way. She had a major in dietetics and a minor in communications. And it's one of those degrees that I think is so complementary to what we do, because like we said in the beginning, everybody has to communicate. We're a human working with other humans pretty much anywhere we go as a dietitian. And so this skill is something that we can always benefit from.
One of the analogies I like to make is that everybody eats, so everybody thinks they're an expert in nutrition, and we know they're not. Mm-hmm. Everybody speaks, except for a few rare people that are mute.
Sure.
And so they think they're an expert in communicating. We know we're not. Yep. Communication is something we don't do very well a lot of the time. So it is something that you have to learn and build that skill and practice it.
Absolutely. So to a dietitian who's listening, who's like, I didn't get this exposure in school, I feel very insecure with my communication skills, or I know that I'm not communicating to the best of my ability, where do they start? What is the first step that they would take to start building both their confidence and their knowledge?
Well, I would certainly encourage them to get a copy of the book, which they can get 14 hours of continuing education credit.
Amazing. I'll link it in our show notes.
Price.
For sure.
But I would say, what area of communication is most impactful to your work? So are you a counselor? Is it interpersonal, one-on-one, that kind of thing? And actually, we do a pretty good job in our training dietitians how to be good counselors. That's the one area of communication that we don't tend to miss.
I did have one class on that. I wish it was more, but I did have one class.
But maybe you're being asked to do writing newsletters, or maybe you're having to give in-service trainings, you know, whatever it is, maybe food demonstrations. There's different kinds of things that we specifically might have to do for communication. I would practice in that area, but the foundational approach that you use is fundamentally the same. And so I always taught my students that there were three areas that you had to kind of focus on. One is your channel. So it might be the written channel or the podcasting or the food demo. But then those two other foundational things are your audience and your message. And so one of the big things that I think we don't focus on enough is really understanding our audience. And how do you do that? And I think we're becoming more aware of that. But when you really get to know your audience, how to make your message really resonate with them,
absolutely,
use words that they understand, those kinds of things, it all fits together. We tend to think about the message. I mean, you take a class and you have to get the right evidence base and cite your work, and you might take a writing class, those kind of things. But And that's really important, but you have to make sure that it's what your audience needs.
Absolutely.
And wants.
And we are starting to hear that a little bit, especially more in the business world. We're hearing about like know your ideal client, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that that's hard to do. I mean, I'm still getting to know my audience of dietitians, and I am a dietitian. What you said about language is so true. When I first started, I couldn't use the phrase imposter syndrome because dietitians didn't know what that was. They were struggling with it, but they didn't know it. Mm-hmm. So I had to talk around it. Now, if I talk about other things, it resonates differently how we speak about it, how people internalize that, how they interpret it. So mm-hmm. really playing around with what sticks and what doesn't and doing your research and getting to know the people you serve does make a huge difference in your communication skills.
So often I think we have a handout or a set of guidelines or something that we tend to like throw at everybody mm-hmm. and expect it to stick. And that just isn't the way it works.
No.
And so to really understand communication, the way I like to explain it and the way we describe it in the book, the very first chapter, is communication is a relationship between you and the receiver of that information. It's give and take. And that's the fundamental basis for effective communication, is recognizing that. It's not Absolutely. Just you shooting a message out there.
No, and that's something that I feel like we don't get a lot of education on, or at least from my experience and from what I hear from other dietitians, is that we learn how to like spout information. We don't necessarily learn how to listen and tweak and respond. And that is such an important and beautiful piece of mm-hmm. the puzzle, to really sit there and hear what the other person is saying, rather than while they're talking, thinking about how you're going to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing.
You said it. And listening is, this, I used to have an activity I did with my students, and they had no idea that the bottom line was they were finding out how well they listened. And it was fun every time I did it, like to yeah. see them, their response to like, oh my goodness, I didn't remember anything people had told wow. me. So you really have to build that skill.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's still working on it.
We all are. We're always getting better at it. And you're always going to have days where you're stronger with it versus mm-hmm. not, because again, we are human. Mm-hmm. So that's normal too. So having, I guess you would say, that grace and compassion for yourself as you're learning and growing is important too.
Well, and one of the problems that we have today is people's attention is a rare commodity. And yes. And to gain someone's attention when there are so many distractions, namely these things.
Oh yeah, our phones.
That people are constantly distracted by uh-huh. that's a huge barrier, and something that we need to be cognizant of in ourselves, that we're not constantly being distracted, that we can give people our full attention. That's totally needed to be a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in communicating, we need to make sure that we have someone's attention before we try to spill a bunch of dietary information at them.
Of course. Of course. So it sounds like on the one hand, we have to make sure that we set ourselves up for success and that we're ready to listen. And that might mean that your phone goes away. Or for example, my phone right now is on silent, so that if it rings, I don't know about it and it doesn't interrupt us. You turn off notifications, all of these push notifications that we get on our laptops, and try and pare down what could pull your attention away. But then we can't control other people and the attention spans that they have and the distractions that they have. So do you have any tips, and this might be a huge question, but do you have any tips for navigating that when we're working with someone else and we can't necessarily control whether or not we're going to have their undivided attention?
Yes. And in fact, I have a whole page on my website that's of tips. And one of them is, awesome. Is 5 tips for gaining the attention of your audience.
Beautiful.
And this is something I discuss a lot when I'm doing workshops, and it's in the book. Yes, there are approaches to help you gain the attention of your audience. And that's oftentimes the number one objective of any communication, is to get someone's attention until they're aware that you're there and that you're talking to them, or have a message on Facebook or whatever it is. It doesn't matter what you've created. Attention is the first thing. And so you need to make it easy and desirable for them to pay attention to you. So there's a variety of things that are related to that. And then you have to, we have short attention spans, you need to regain attention. So for example, in a presentation, we talk about contrasting where you're not doing the exact same thing throughout the presentation. You change things up every so often. And there's a balance between data and stories or things like that. And so there's a variety of approaches. But if someone's not paying attention to you, yes, it's sort of out of your control. But if you don't gain their attention, as far as I'm concerned, it's your fault.
Interesting.
It's, yeah. You can't, yes, maybe there's, you know, they're like, they never put it down. But you can also, I used to do this with my college students. You can also teach your audience how to be a good audience. And there are ways to do that. And we even talk about that. There's a whole entire chapter in this book on basically on what you might, if you were an elementary ed teacher, considered classroom management.
Yeah.
How do you manage an audience? And we aren't taught that, but I used to teach it in my class and I made sure it was in the book. And so yes, there are ways to gain the attention and maintain the attention of your audience.
Sure. And it also makes sense that we essentially teach people how to treat us and teach people with boundaries. So I would imagine that that is absolutely relevant and certainly something that we want to do when we're coming into, whether it's a Zoom room or a big conference or a small one-on-one session, that you're setting boundaries and expectations and helping them know what to do.
One of the fun activities I used to do with my students was teaching them how to be a good audience for each other. Mm-hmm. And I would do this little scenario where one of the students would be called out in the hall and the TA would give them this little speech they were going to make when they came back in. And everyone else was given an assignment of doing something either distracting or paying very good attention. It was kind of half and half. Mm-hmm. And they had the experience of recognizing how the audience impacts the speaker and vice versa. And we had good discussions about that. And I would tell them, if you don't think the professor in the front of the room is paying attention to how well you're paying attention,
of course,
you need to wake up. And absolutely. If you want to ask them for a letter of recommendation or something like that, let me teach you how to sit. And let me teach you how to look at them. And let me teach you how to hold your pencil and write. And I said, you try this in a class that you find boring and it will all of a sudden not be so boring.
Of course, we're engaging ourselves. We're staying focused in the present moment.
That's
right. And absolutely. I'm a huge mindfulness meditation fan. So that's right up my alley of reminding myself to stay rooted in what's happening right now. And you're just taking in the experience and it really does lead to a different level of engagement.
It does. And I've had speakers come up to me after a conference and say, thank you for smiling at me. I liked looking at you in the audience because you were paying attention and you were giving me positive feedback. Well, you know, if you're doing that to your professor, are they going to give you a better grade? Subconsciously, you better believe it.
Yeah, it's true.
I used to tell my students this. I said, I'm going to give you some tricks to communicate. You are communicating back to that speaker. Remember, it's a relationship.
Sure.
And so we are always communicating.
Yeah. You saying that brings me back to my musical theater days. And even though you can't always necessarily see faces, you can feel the energy of the audience. And it does change your performance. The more energy they give, the more energy you have to give back. And you just keep feeding off of each other. And it's a really beautiful relationship, like you said. And the same thing is going to be true, whether we're in a conference room of a lot of people, or again, we have one person who we're trying to give a diet education to.
It really makes a difference. So engaging your audience and getting them involved, asking them questions and then listening to them, having discussions, you know, the lecture is dead. Let's put it in the grave and engage our audiences.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that we talked a little bit about in our emails back and forth about what the podcast was going to be about was you mentioned like a signature style. You mentioned identity. And I would imagine that that feeds into your engagement, it feeds into your approach and can help with this whole process. Can you talk to me a little bit more about what you mean by having a signature style?
It's a word that probably is a little bit synonymous with maybe your brand. Maybe that's yep. the more like
the trendy
phrase or a trendy thing. But I think of it, and I especially think of it in terms of how we communicate. I like to really, again, I'm an encourager, I'm a coach of other RDNs, and I like you to recognize your own uniqueness. And all of the experiences that you bring to the table are what's going to make you great at what you do. And so you don't have to mimic some other speaker or podcaster or social media
Instagram account. Yeah.
Be yourself and bring all of that to the table. And if you are, you talked about musical theater. If you like music, like I'm not that talented, but
you enjoy
it. My old nickname back in the day, 30 years ago, was the singing dietitian, because I wrote all these songs for teaching kids about nutrition with music.
It's fantastic.
So that was my signature style. And that was something that made what I did unique. Everybody has their things that they can bring to what they do. However it is you communicate, whatever channels you use, whatever audiences you work with, all of those things together create your signature style. And that signature style will in some ways stay the same. There'll be certain things about it that are kind of permanent, and other things that are fluid.
Of course.
Like over the course of my career, I've done so many different things, and some things have some real common threads, and other things are, I'm not writing nutrition music anymore
for children.
But I still have songbooks and CDs. I could bring some to you, but does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And it's so poignant, especially right now as we're recording this with my group program for dietitians. We're talking about professional identity, and we're talking about their values and who they are as a practitioner. It's something that I didn't get a lot of in my education, and I wish I had. This fostering of a strong sense of self, mm-hmm. because you're right. You need to bring more of your authentic self, because that's what helps you stand out. It's what helps you feel more comfortable, because you're not putting on an act, you're being yourself, and it helps you stand out a little bit. So I always tell people that I'm not here to help you be like me. I'm here to help you be more like yourself.
And there are so many different things that we can do as a dietitian. And not every job is for every person. And no. One of the things that kind of bothers me is when we sort of idolize certain positions and badmouth others. We need them all.
We do.
And certain things appeal to me and other things don't. And same for everybody else. And so mm-hmm. you need to find those sweet spots. And for some people, like I love communicating in front of a large audience. It really kind of juices me up. Mm-hmm. Other people hate that, but maybe they love writing. We are all communicators, but that doesn't mean we all have to communicate through the same channels or in the same ways. But maybe I can get better at writing. I certainly have by writing this.
Of course.
And you can get better at speaking, even though maybe that's not something that you're as comfortable with. So don't not do something because you think maybe you don't like it. Give it a try.
Of course.
But you will find things that just really.
They light you up.
They light you. I like that way of saying it. They light you up. You are more excited at the end of your day than you were when you got out of bed.
Yeah. And you have to find those things, and they will be different for everyone. I am a big fan on this podcast of, you know, there is no right way to be a dietitian. Mm-hmm. There is no best area of dietetics to be in. There is only the best one for you at a certain stage of your life. And finding that. Now, I don't know if you have any concrete tips for this, because I know from identity development, it's pretty abstract and it takes time. Do you have any tips for someone finding what their quote unquote signature style would be?
Oh,
I know.
I don't know.
It's a hard question.
I don't know if I have like 5 tips for that.
I know.
I might have to work on that. I like to make 5 tips for things. Well, one of the things is there are a lot of resources that kind of help you reflect on your strengths.
There you go.
And I can't come to mind with certain ones, but, you know, using some of those tools and maybe working with a mentor or a coach that can help you kind of work through that, but also kind of go back through your experiences. I often will I encourage people to reflect on your journey, reflect on your story.
Yeah.
And what were the things that you've always gravitated to? We all have those things. And you always got a lot of accolades for doing them well, or you just, they lit you up. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that are contributing to that signature style. And again, I liked what you said just a little bit ago, in the season of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go through different, especially, well, I don't want to be super traditional, generic, gender specific, but
that's okay.
A lot of us are women.
Yes.
You know, as we raise families.
Yes.
I mean, the time I taught at Purdue was also the time my kids went there. That was a great boost to their tuition.
Absolutely.
And I knew everything that was going on campus, and we had lunch every week together.
Yeah.
So that was perfect for that season of my life. You know, in other seasons, I worked at WIC during the time that they were babies.
Lined up beautifully.
I was breastfeeding at the same time. I was coaching other women to breastfeed. So a lot of things that I've done in my life had a lot to do with the season that I was in. And mm-hmm. and don't think that because you start in one job that you have to stay there. Now you might, but chances are you won't.
Especially these days, chances are we tend to bounce around more, and that's not a bad thing because we change over our lives.
And a door opens, and sometimes you're kind of done with what with where you were. You mm-hmm. loved it, you did well with it. You kind of end on a high note. Everyone hates to see you go. You're like, you know what? I have this new opportunity and mm-hmm. I'm going to take it.
Exactly. Exactly. Everything can serve a purpose. And when you decide to leave something, it doesn't have to be because it's bad. It can be because it's time for you to do something different, or you've gotten what you needed out of it and you can go explore something.
Put in what you've been able to. It's like, I've contributed. For instance, leaving teaching, I did that partly. My husband was retiring. We now have, mm-hmm. we're going on our sixth grandchild. We love having all that free time. And
fantastic.
If it wasn't for the pandemic, we'd be traveling more, but
I'm sure.
I also recognized, and it wasn't until after I had retired that the Academy approached me, but I had written a textbook during the time that I was teaching, and it about killed me. It is hard work.
Oh,
I would never have said yes to it if I was still teaching. And I am so thankful that I had the opportunity to give this gift to the Academy and to our profession, that if I was still working,
you wouldn't have had the capacity.
I wouldn't have had that time or energy or resources to put into it. So, you know, there just is a season, a time and a season for everything. And, you know, so don't rush things, and also don't stop something from opening up to that next adventure.
Absolutely. I love that. Now, we did have two questions that came in from individuals from Instagram, if you're okay with me throwing you for
sure. Absolutely.
And then I have one last question that I want to end on.
Okay.
But the questions that came in, they're not necessarily communication specific. They're like shrouded in some other things. So feel free to let me know if you feel like it's not in your scope, but I think that there are some gems that we can glean from them.
Okay.
The first dietitian asked, how do you gracefully tell a patient that the diet that their doctor recommended is garbage in their opinion? And so—
Oh, I've actually had this experience, and I think awesome. Most dietitians have. Okay.
It doesn't.
Let me tell you.
So it's being diplomatic. Yes, please do.
So I was approached, gosh, this is years ago, by the mayor of our small town to do a wellness program with the police force.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, okay, I'll try it. Again, I like trying new things.
Sure.
So I had a meeting with the police chief. Well, he was on, let me think, what was the diet at the time? South Beach. Remember that? Oh. Or is that like dating?
Yeah,
me?
No, I remember.
Okay.
That.
So, and he was like, oh, I'm all for it. I want you to put the officers on it. And you know what? You just let them know that that isn't what your profession advocates. And I wanted to do a much more comprehensive kind of lifestyle approach we had a lot of fun. I took them on grocery store tours and we did cooking together, and I did a lot of individual kind of assessing where they were and what little tweaks they could make and that kind of thing. That it was going to be a very individual lifestyle approach, and that one of the concepts that I think is important for us to present to the clients we work with is the concept of sustainability.
Yeah.
And if you can't live with a diet for the rest of your life, it's probably garbage.
Yeah.
And that's what so many of the fad diets are, is they're either too restrictive, some of them aren't even healthy.
Yeah.
And they aren't something that we would want to eat that way. Exactly. But if it is something that, yeah, this is something that I could eat like this for the rest of my life, then you know what? That's probably, there are a lot of different ways we can eat.
Absolutely. Right? There's no right way.
Yeah. There are just so many. And that's why, you know, kind of that individualized approach. I gave you too much of an answer, but.
No, that's good. And what it really comes down to is that we're not throwing the doctor under the bus, right? Because you're still on a team with that doctor, even if you feel they're overstepping their boundaries, even if you feel that they're not giving great advice. So we don't want to alienate them in front of our patient. We can, however, explain where we're coming from and our concerns and leave an open invitation to explain more about what you would recommend as an alternative,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what you did.
And a lot of times the patient, by asking that question, is probably asking for your opinion to not follow that diet.
Yeah.
Or there's a good chance that they are. And if that's the case, then they're going to be very much on your team.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I appreciate that answer.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't the doctor that recommended that. Who knows? Maybe it was. That was really popular. This was back in like the early 80s.
It was. But I hear it all the time from different doctors that recommend very questionable things because they're humans too, and they don't have the background that we do. So they're going to
make recommendations. They might have had a patient that was successful on it. I mean, people do lose weight on crazy diets. And so if the patient before you came in and said, well, I just lost 50 pounds on XYZ, then the next patient that comes in goes, why don't you try XYZ?
Slap a generic recommendation without looking at all of the other things that go into place or the long-term success or the ramifications of it. Yeah. And that's one of the benefits that we have as practitioners is that, you know, we're skilled at looking at the whole nuance of the situation.
Yeah. And individualizing, that's really what the dietitian can do.
Absolutely.
Again, it goes back to knowing your audience, knowing that patient and working with them and their culture and their barriers and their socioeconomic level and all of that.
Exactly. So one of the things that just popped into my head with that from what we were talking about earlier is, what if we turned it around and asked them, the patient themselves, what they thought of the diet, just from what little they knew about it? And you might hear them voice some concerns, or maybe they'll, for example, I had a client who, I take a non-diet approach, and I have a client who came in who loves Weight Watchers. And I didn't bash Weight Watchers. I said, tell me what you like about it. Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you don't like about it? And from there, we were able to have a really fantastic conversation about what she was looking for from our work together.
Well, you know, and there are people who love bean counting.
Mm-hmm.
So those points just resonate with them and they like structure. And so, you know what, for some people, providing that structure is helpful.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's, again, having that conversation and opening it up and really understanding and holding space. Mm-hmm. I love that. Now, our very last question from the dietitians from Instagram, one was looking for advice as a new inpatient dietitian trying to gain confidence. So are there tips if we can zero in on confidence through communication, like one or two things that this dietitian can do as a new inpatient RD?
A lot of times I'm talking about this when I'm talking about how to be ready to stand up in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the same things are probably going to apply.
They are.
One being prepared. Know that you have prepared your knowledge. Now, again, you're always going to feel like you've talked about the imposter syndrome. You're always going to feel like, oh, they might, you know, figure out that one thing I don't know and I'm going to feel terrible. But practice So think about, maybe there's a situation where they have to talk to a doctor, or they've got grand rounds or something where they're worried about something. Chances are they're probably not worried about talking to patients as much as maybe their colleagues.
Yep.
And practice that. So think about what might be that encounter and kind of think about what the scenario might look like and what can you say? Practice really helps.
It does.
And then think about just your own demeanor. You know, take a deep breath. Stand, have a good posture. Say some mantras in your head of, you know, you Absolutely. Are capable. You are capable. Those Such kind a of fan. Things make a difference.
They do. They do. I love all of that. It's all of the things that I recommend to the dietitians I work with too. It's all about just taking a deep breath, practicing, experiencing it, and gaining confidence with time, and knowing that you got the job, you are qualified.
Mm-hmm. And amazing. People don't expect you to never make a mistake.
Nope.
How do you own it? How do you ask for help? All of those things can factor in.
They do.
And you're going to gain confidence through experience. So feeling nervous is natural.
Yep.
It means you're human.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. They're all fantastic points. Now, as we wrap up today, I do hope that we can squeeze in one more question, which is there anything that you're still working on related to your skills with communication? What are you working on improving?
So this is funny. So I have a student Instagram group. And one of the things they all decided that we're going to be on the feed was either TikTok or Reels or different kinds of video.
Okay.
Like, okay. So I told the group, I said, well, I need to do that too. So sometime in the next month, I'm going to post a video. And it's one of those things like every day I go like, okay, let me today.
Maybe and, today.
and I used to teach video to my students and I've been on camera, but somehow doing those little sort of selfie kind of things
I know.
Is just like not my style.
That's
but you
fair.
Know what? You have to force yourself to do things outside your comfort zone. So right now, for a while, it was social media. Like
yeah.
I thought, I'm an old lady. Do I really have to be on social media? And so I forced myself to do it. I'm on there every mm-hmm. day. And you know, it's funny. I can't tell you how many people said, oh, I just follow you on social media. You're just yeah. such an expert. I'm like, what? Are you kidding?
I know.
And so do the things that you don't think you can do because you can.
I love that. And I love that you're still pushing yourself to go outside your comfort zone and try something new. And I think that normalizes it for a lot of us who are worried of the same thing mm-hmm. And scared yeah. of the same thing. Fantastic. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you and pick your brain a little bit and hear your background. How can everyone get in touch with you and learn more about this incredible work that you're doing?
Well, I would certainly invite them to visit my website, nutritioncommunicator.com. You can message me on there. You can email me, barb@nutritioncommunicator.com.
Fantastic. I'll put everything in the show notes.
You can totally be in touch with me if you want to put contact information in your show notes or whatever.
Everywhere.
I love to help people. I still write letters of recommendation for students. I did two of them today.
Beautiful.
Entered him on Dicus. So yeah, I'm all about helping people succeed.
Amazing. I'll make sure to list your book and all of the links and everything in the notes so everyone can grab them. But thank you so much, Barb. It was wonderful to chat with you.
Likewise.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Empowering Dietitians podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, there are two things that you can do that dramatically help to support the show. First, leave a quick rating and or review on your podcast listening app of choice, which really helps new listeners find the show. Second, sharing this episode with a dietitian friend can also go a long way in spreading the anti-hustle message to dietitians far and wide. And speaking of supporting one another, even though I'm on maternity leave right now, that doesn't mean this podcast is your only way of receiving support. On my website, you can find a host of resources, from free workbooks and journals that will opt you into my monthly newsletter support, to a whole library of recorded courses and classes, many of which are approved for CEUs by the CDR. Check out everything I have to offer on my website at www.empoweringdietitians.com.